Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled. Welcome to Pixel Sift, your favourite weekly video game podcast, available all across Australia and the world thanks to that cool little thing called the internet. And for a little change of pace today, Mitch, he is over in Sydney. He's checking out the RTX Australia convention over there on the weekend. And we were joined in the studio and on the mics by our intrepid video producer, James.
Yay.
And the interesting thing about that is if you're watching online, you can actually see James switch the camera to himself so he can see his own face.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just going to be all James all the time for the rest of the episode, basically. Today we are chatting with Brendan Reagan and Lisa Rye of Stirfire Studios about their game Freedom Fall. We're also talking a little bit about their future games that are coming up and sort of some of the things that they've learned from having their game out there on, you know, on the stores and online and on different platforms over the years that they have had it out there.
We'll also be touching on gambling in esports, which came up in the news recently when Sky Sports said they were planning a documentary on CSGO and the betting scene in professional gaming.
There's also been a lot of betting controversy and match fixing controversy outside of the world of gaming. We're going to kind of look at that in comparison to that.
Yep.
And James.
And finally, we'll be talking when musicians make games, does an internationally renowned music idol attached to your product make for a good game?
It's a good question. That's a good question. And we're going to have a look at it a bit later on in the episode. Right now though, let's jump into it.
You're listening to Pixel Sift, or you might be watching Pixel Sift on Twitch. Pixel Sift.
It's been in the news lately. You might have seen some of the reporting on it. One of the biggest sports in the world. It's tennis. It's not an esport. But there's been a big major sort of scandal with, you know, high-level professional players getting into all the bad situations where they're throwing matches and things like that. And we thought we'd have a look at that because it has a big impact on the way that professional sports are played. And when people are looking at things like esports, which is an emerging sort of genre and an emerging sort of area in which people can compete, of course, things like gambling and betting on these things starts to become an issue for people who are playing these sort of things. And I guess see where we think this sort of thing has kind of gone and where it's going to go.
Well, that's it. I mean, like, you know, match fixing and gambling, are involved in sporting, whether we like it or not, especially the match fixing side of it. So as esports grows, of course, it's going to, you know, the bad bits are going to grow with it. I'm not saying gambling is a bad part of it. It just is something that needs to be kind of regulated, I guess, and controlled as the sport emerges.
It's, I think, with, you know, a sport like tennis, for example, which is such a huge high-profile sport, has plenty of money around it, has plenty of people who are in the administration of it, that something like this can happen at this level is, you know, still very interesting. So for, I guess, a fledgling sports league of different codes and different types of games as well, to have something like, you know, a match-fixing scandal, which has actually happened, and there's been a few of them out there already that have already happened, you know, it can be, I guess, you know, they haven't really learnt the lessons. And, you know, if a big code like tennis or, you know, something like, you know, performance enhancing stuff happens in, you know, large sporting codes in Australia, you know, where's that going to fit into the esports world?
Yeah, I mean, with any kind of sports where, like, again, you're going to have these things involved, especially when a huge amount of money is involved that's coming into esports, like, esports is supposed to be worth an estimated like $618 million, I think, at the moment, and it's like growing exponentially. I think as far as gambling goes, we're not so much match fixing, but there's also like, you know, millions of dollars worth of gambling. I think William Hill's estimated they're going to get about $1.6 million worth of gaming, esports related bets over the next year.
Wow.
So again, with these sports, with the growth, with this money on the line, you're going to have problems. I mean, there's lots of different avenues for betting in gaming as well. And I think that's another thing, all these different avenues for not only gaming, but esports and betting and whatever. And without the huge high profile kind of unification that other sports have, you're going to have a lot of cracks that these kind of things can just slip through.
And a lot of the people who are going to be playing these sports are going to be, you know, younger people. This may be the first thing that they've done professionally, the first sort of thing that they can kind of, you know, experience. And, you know, the temptation to take these large sums of money to go and, you know, throw a match or go something like that, it would be very tempting. Yeah. You know, sometimes they're paying big amounts of money. Some of the examples that we've come across recently, there are the StarCraft leagues in Korea are very big, and they are, you know, there's lots of levels to them, and the way that people play the games, you know, they move up different scales, and there's been plenty of players who've been caught out in that particular thing where, you know, they've taken a cash bribe and have been thinking. One of the examples, now this is going to be a difficult thing to say, and it's perfectly one of these, like, we're going to put this up on the website, but it's one of these gamertag names. So it's Gun GF, or is it Gung Fu Ban Da, and his name's actually Fabian Mayer. He was a 16-year-old player in one of the amateur sort of lower level leagues in the StarCraft thing, and basically he had a deal with a guy called Jason, who was Jeremy Sen, and they had a sort of a deal where he would basically throw all the matches, and he would get personally offended if one of the matches didn't, you know, go his way. And he basically got caught out for that, and it's been sort of banned from the leagues in playing those sort of things.
Desperation in games.
Yeah. It's an even bigger one example as well. There was a Korean team, Liquid, which is one of the big teams that has come out of Korea. It's pretty famous in terms of the world of esports teams. They had 9 people arrested last year for match fixing, including coaches and players. And interestingly, the Korean sort of legal system is kind of, there's a bit of anonymity around things, so there's not so much reporting on the way that when things move through the courts. But yeah, apparently it was reported they received between 4,400 US and 17,000 US, which is 5 million to 20 million won, which is the Korean currency, to basically, you know, influence the way that matches would go and the way that the betting has gone.
I mean, there was the, 21 players from CSGO last year, I think. And it ended up coming, it was just until 2016, but then they got that indefinite ban.
Yep.
I mean, you actually brought up a pretty good point before, the fact that a lot of this gambling is done by underage people. And again, this comes from it coming from many different branches and the lack of regulation. I mean, this is a new world for gambling, esports. I mean, newish, and it's going to need some regulation, because at the moment there's no way to control it, and it's rife. And it doesn't even have to be money that these kids are gambling. I mean, you have access points, so like CSGO Lounge, which is basically enables players to, like, you know, gamble, but with their in-game add-ons, and you know, that obviously brings up age issues, because you don't know ages based on that information.
There's a blurry line, I think, as well, between people who will be, you know, committing sort of like, I guess, gambling sort of actions within a game, and then watching a game, and then there's that sort of, you know, what's the next step, to just chuck a couple of dollars in, and then it kind of becomes a problem.
Well, that's it. Yeah. These underage people are already undertaking in kind of activities and games that maybe is just maybe a little bit ahead of where they're supposed to be on a socially aged acceptance level, I guess. So yeah, it is gray area, and it's hard to kind of monitor. Like I've said, I feel it's almost impossible at this current stage, especially with all these avenues for things. Like there's another one, like skin exchange, where like basically people can buy and sell all their add-ons for games. So, you know, there's heaps of options for kids and people
in general. Money through that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's enough that some of the teams in Australia, there was a bunch of Australian players who had been suspended from Counter-Strike GO. There's a team called 24/7 Esports, and they dropped some players from their Counter-Strike GO team, basically on the fact that there may have been a bit of a rumor, but there may have been some improper behavior.
Yeah, that was from an upcoming actual team, wasn't it?
So they were kind of just recruiting, and then they dropped a bunch of players basically because there was a bit of a thing out there, because obviously they don't want
to
be...
They need to be distanced because every reaction to this kind of thing in the esports gaming world at the moment has been pretty, you know, pretty brutal. They've just been cutting them loose basically. So you don't want to be caught up in that, especially when you are an emerging kind of force in the esports world, in this country at least.
Yeah, it's definitely something to think about, and I think we're going to see a lot more of this stuff as it goes down the track. Keep an eye on that. We will keep you up to date. We'll keep you up to date with all the, I guess, developments as this goes along. That's right, you're listening to Pixel Sift. We are based in WA, Western Australia, and you can probably listen to us anywhere in the world if you felt like it. Mm. You know, you can check us out on there.
Yeah, internet's nifty like that.
It is definitely nifty like that.
Big fan.
Yeah, it is probably, it's going to go far, right? You know, I have a prediction, you know, people are going to be all about the internet one day, and hopefully that day will be soon.
That and blue jeans.
Blue jeans.
They're the future.
Yeah, exactly right. Earlier this week, we had a chat to Lisa Rye and Brendan Reagan. They are from Stirfire Studios, a studio based in Perth, Western Australia. They have a game called Freedom Fall. It is sort of a platformer, very amazing art style, very sort of painterly and cartoony sort of style. Very cool to check out. I asked them how releasing the game a couple of years ago went and what the experience was like.
Fantastic reactions from lots of people. It's reviewed very well for a first game, I think. I think Steam was definitely the highlight. We released on iOS and a number of smaller platforms before that, and getting traction on those was quite tricky. But yeah, I think it did quite well on Steam. So Freedom Fall is a down-scrolling platformer. You start at the top of this massive tower, and it's essentially a reverse Rapunzel kind of storyline. So instead of being the hero and trying to save the princess, you're being trapped in this massive tower by the princess, and you have to try to escape from her. My name's Lisa Rye, I'm the creative director.
And I'm Brendan, and I'm the technical director. So we were in like the third or fourth cohort that got greenlit. So compared to getting greenlit now, it was a very nerve-wracking process. I've talked to some people since, and it seems to be easier now to get through. The thing they say about sort of the Steam sales is pretty true. Like the amount of secondary sales you get when Steam does the deep discount things, people tend to buy games on those, which is good, but it makes me worried about the longevity of the games market if we're all, you know, deep discounting our games. But we'll see what happens there.
Do you think there's a problem with it sort of devaluing your game to a point where basically people are not going to buy it at a certain point, and are we racing to the bottom on pricing?
I think that we have made a mistake with Freedom Fall in putting it in too many bundles too early. I think that the sort of 75-50, like the 25-30% discount on Steam is fine. I think when you start getting down to, you know, the 80-90% discounts that you get with bundles, that's really problematic. There's also this secondary market that's emerging. This has happened to us, where you'll get resellers who will pick up your game on bundle, and then they will take your keys and resell them. So I'm happy for like 1,000 interested people who play games to get a copy of Freedom Fall at a deep discount, and then they're really excited for a next game because they liked it and they decided to try it. I'm not so sure about how I feel about an arbitrage person buying that game at a deep discount and then selling it to people for two or three times the price.
Does it make it economically viable if you're going to be, you know, having these sort of people undercutting you?
I don't think that our next game is going to go into a bundle for quite some time after release. I think the first Freedom Fall bundle, we went in like 6 months after launch. That was way too early. I think we need to leave it for a year or 18 months. I think Armella is a good example because they were in early access for almost a year. They came out on PS4, and then now they're finally starting to get into a bundle. So that's 8-9 months on, but they've kind of had a long cycle of the game being available. Whereas for us, it was barely 6 months on Steam. And then we already were like, yeah, let's try this bundle thing. That's the thing I'd advise other indies, be really, really careful about engaging in bundles, especially some of the smaller bundle guys, because we've been in several of them now, and later on, it's not as good.
What are some of the main things you've learnt over this, you know, couple of years of making the game and having it out there, and, you know, what are some things that you definitely would do differently for your next game as you're coming out?
I think looking at the reviews we got for Freedom Fall, most people really enjoyed the story and the content, but they wanted more content. So the length of the game is fairly short. It's sort of a 2 to 3 hour length game. So definitely for our next game, we'd be working on making sure that it's a longer experience and that there's more to do in the game.
yeah, those things and marketing. You need to really start that conversation right when you begin the title. Do not leave it for the last minute. We didn't do enough marketing on Freedomfall, and that was another reason it didn't really do that well in sales. We've done quite well, I've since discovered, compared to a lot of other people releasing at a similar or later time with a similar scoped game. But marketing's really, really important. The other one was we came out on mobile, and then we came out on Ouya like 2 months later, and then we came out on Steam, you know, in the January, so that was sort of 3 or 4 months after that. And you really want to, this is really hard for a small studio, but you're only going to get one shot at the press, so you really want to maximize that. It's not as important as it once was, but if you're available where people play their games right when your press is happening, then they're more likely to buy it. Otherwise, there's so many games out there, they will probably forget about you and not buy you on when you're available on their platform.
So I guess for people who, you know, may have been following on from other stuff you've been doing in the past, what's something that you are working on that you could kind of at least tell us a little bit about for the, you know, in the near future, or maybe give us a bit of an idea about what sort of thing we can be looking forward to in the future?
We've got a title coming. It's coming for release next year. We're pretty happy with how it's progressed. We've sort of raised the bar on a lot of things. Like it's a more complex game. It's going to be longer. It looks better. It's already almost as large in terms of like assets as Freedomfall is, but it's gorgeous.
So Debug is basically a game about bugs, about using bugs in a platformer environment to get through the game. It's sort of a puzzle-solving adventure where you get to use glitches to get through obstacles and enemies. You can control your environment, basically hack the world around you and be in control of it. And so it's sort of a tribal cyberpunk world. It's this little simulated world with these people in it, and they get attacked by this massive corruption virus thing. So you are acting as a debug program running through this world and trying to clear out all of the corruption and viruses through it. So
how far along are you with that? How far until we can sort of start seeing this game in a playable form, and when can people start getting their hands on it approximately?
Well, we did actually bring it to the Perth Game Festival late last year, and I got some fantastic responses from people. It was, interesting to see people playing the game and trying out different combinations of bugs. As a game designer, I always love watching people play the game because you always see things you don't expect. So, you know, people coming up to every problem. One of the things in the game is I want to make sure that each problem has multiple solutions. And so seeing people use creativity to get past these obstacles in ways I didn't even expect is fantastic.
And is this a clever way to kind of cut down on your QA, and that you can say that if anything doesn't work properly, you can be like, oh, that's just part of the game. That's what's supposed to happen at that point. You just didn't do it right.
I wish, but no. No, it's one of those things. Like in this game, I expect players will find ways of breaking the game, and some of those ways should actually be intended. So I think it'll be fantastic to see players' reactions when they go, oh, I broke it. This is amazing. So yeah, I think it'll excite a certain kind of person.
That was Lisa Rye and Brendan Reagan. They are from Stirfire Studios, that were talking a bit about their game Debug, which you may have had a chance to play if you're at the Perth Games Festival in November last year. You may have also played their game Freedomfall, which came out a couple of years ago. James, you had a chance to play Freedomfall, didn't you?
Yes, I was playing Freedomfall for about 10 minutes before we went to air. And it was actually a really good game. I love the art style. I love the jumping mechanics. The controls on iOS were a little bit difficult, but that's just me being really, you know, clumsy.
There was a way to change the controls screens as well, but you didn't.
You know, didn't say
that
one.
You didn't delve into the menus of that one.
As far as visually, like, I mean, I didn't play the game, but so I don't know how the controlling was, but it looks very fluid and looks smooth and very like ninja-esque, or the little kind of like nuances to your movement. I really like the look of it, and I'm looking forward to playing that. Yeah.
I had a chance to play a bit of Debug as well while I was doing the interview with Brendan and Lisa in the week. And if you like the style of Freedomfall, you're going to love the style of Debug as well. It's definitely a very pretty game. And it's really like the mechanic they've got is where you've got kind of different powers that you can choose, and they move things within the world. And sometimes it's kind of, you know, challenging to try and to do things. And it's one of those puzzle games where you're like, if your head's not in the right space, you'll kind of be like, oh man, how do I solve this problem?
Yeah.
But it's kind of exciting and cool to kind of go through the the play, and it looks like it's going to be pretty cool. So we're definitely going to keep an eye on that one. If you were listening to that as well, there was some background music as well that you may have heard. It was by Paramorph. You can check them out at paramorph.bandcamp.com to have a listen to that one. We'll stick a link up on our website.
Beautiful.
You're listening to Pixel Sift. Nice work there, Scotty. Done a brand new promo for us there. We are now going to talk about a little bit about some of the times when musicians and sort of lend their talents and lend their creative abilities to making games. This week, there was a brand new announcement of an Iron Maiden MMO, free-to-play MMO that kind of came out. Scotty, can you tell us a little bit about that?
The one that's coming up... what was it called? Legacy of the Beast. Sorry, I had to drain my memory through that.
Yep.
Through their like plethora of games that are coming out from them. So yeah, basically they're releasing a new game called Legacy of the Beast. It's a mobile game. It's going to be free on iOS and Android. And you know, just add to the kind of ongoing successful line of, like, they've got beers out now, they've got a headphone line out, and yeah, now this again.
Merchandise.
Yeah, I mean, they started in the 90s with video games. They had Ed Hunter, which was basically a Doom, you know, remake with Iron Maiden scoring, which is great, you know, very fitting.
Yeah.
And then last year they had Speed of Life, which was just an 8-bit kind of game to go with their Speed of Light musical stiff.
So they've had a sort of long career in the whole the gaming experience.
I think kind of enhancing the idea of merchandising was really great.
Some of the other musicians you may have seen who would have created games as well. Unfortunately, you know, earlier this week we had the passing of David Bowie.
Yeah, amongst others.
Yes, yeah. it was a big week, unfortunately. but yeah, we had a game called Omicron, The Nomad Soul, and that was done by a little company you might know as Quantic Dream. Who have gone on to make things like Beyond Two Souls and Heavy Rain and a bunch of other games as well. And David Bowie kind of basically lent his likeness and his musical talents and some of the people in his, I guess his, you know, close inner circle as well, to kind of make this game. And if you want to hear a really good sort of explanation of the game, you should check out the 28 Plays podcast with Paul Verhoeven and Chris Straub. They go through this very well, and Paul Verhoeven does a very good example of...
It's understandable why Bowie's loved so much. You know, he's immortalized through music, he's immortalized through film, through video game, through everything. He's touched on like everything.
Yeah.
But you know, he's not the only one. There's plenty of other kind of musicians that dabbled in their own making of video games, not just kind of affiliating themselves with it. I've got a pretty good list of ones going back from like to like the mid 80s with Frankie Goes to Hollywood had their own game. Michael Jackson's Moonwalker. In 89, there was also a CNC Music Factory game called Power Factory, where you basically just had to kind of make a film clip for them. And that like inspired a bunch of other film clip making games, but for, I think INXS had one maybe.
Really?
There's a small list of others. A good one was Queen had their own game, which apparently took a really long time to develop and just kind of sank in the end, but was, you know, really ambitious. I think they called that The Eye. And it's a really crap game because they just overstretched out the development of it. And it, but anyway, the music is all Queen, so it's great.
Yeah.
Wu-Tang also had a Shaolin-style fighting game, I think, in the late 90s. Yeah, like 99. I don't know. I never played that one, but I've seen clips of it. It looks cool. And I think it was just a basic kind of fighting
game. I think it depends as well if they're doing it for, you know, the purposes of just kind of merchandising their thing, or are they doing it to make it a... you know, a better, more interesting game, or is it something creatively?
Most of those ones were like, yeah, some kind of creative outlook. I think Bjork was another one that was really about creativity. Her Biophilia release basically had like kind of app for each song that was the sort of game that you could kind of like, you know, interact with the song to the point where you kind of really understood kind of where she was coming from. And it was like, it was like I said, it was creative and artistic. It was her kind of portraying her creativity and how she got to these songs through apps and games.
James, you played something a bit of creative and artistic as well earlier today. We were checking out the Tom York, Nigel Goodrick, Polyfauna.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Polyfauna. I don't know how to explain it. It's not really a game as much as it is an experience.
Yeah. We were saying it's very similar to something you might see in a, you know, like an art gallery or something. If there was like a Tom York retrospective, you might go and check out Polyfauna as part of that.
It's like an installation piece.
Yeah, and you kind of just, there's no real instructions in the game. You're kind of just moving through a 3D space with kind of polygony sort of things moving around, and
okay.
Yeah.
You touch things and they go colorful, and
Yeah, if you're watching on Twitch or YouTube, you're seeing the video right now. It's really hard to explain. It's it uses motion detection as well. So like the X and Y axis is in the
phone, as you kind of move it around, or the
so you can either use your fingers or you can move this phone around to sort of explore wherever you are.
And yeah.
You can't really control it. You sort of move forward at a slow pace. Mm. And then you're right, there's bright colors and stuff. And there were many things before where I was just like tapping the screen manically, trying to make something happen. And things would happen.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess what I wanted to achieve when I set out, I did.
Yep.
Just making stuff happen. But
and it's such a minimalistic game, but it's very, I guess you would say it's kind of like almost like a really serene and beautiful experience. I think it sort of really would suit a virtual reality.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of situation. If you had something like one of the Gear VRs or an Oculus Rift or something like that, yeah, you could definitely really one check
of those,
it out.
One of those worlds where you can really get away with polygons.
Yeah.
The virtual reality.
Yeah.
Just to jump back to musicians dabbling in games and stuff, I also stumbled upon Kanye West's game.
Really?
Upcoming, possibly. Maybe he scrapped it. Hopefully he scrapped it. It was because it was like basically a tribute game to his now passed mum, Donda West. And basically it's like, I think your goal is to kind of get her to heaven and through the gates kind of thing.
If anyone could do it, Kanye can do it.
It just didn't sound like it was going to be a very good game.
Do you know who he should get on it?
No.
He should get old 50 Cent onto that, because there was the old 50 Cent Blood in the Sand, which was like this, shooter multiplayer sort of. No, I think it was a single player shooting game.
Awful.
Yeah. It's got a cult following, though. Some people love that game.
I'm not a big 50 fan.
50 Cent, I think.
21 questions.
Yeah, I think he quite likes it. But yeah, like something like that, which is sort of. You know, it kind of just stars him in a sort of different context.
See, that, like you said before, it depends where it comes from. Like, that's obviously some kind of crappy, effortless moneymaker for him. But, like, you know, people with, well-respected musicians, that getting involved in games is great. Like Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails did Quake in 96. He was the composer for that.
Yeah. Which is something I didn't realize until, you know, and it's the music you sound and then you hear it and you're like, oh totally, this totally sounds like something.
Michael Jackson was a ghost producer, ghost composer on Sonic the Hedgehog number 3, which is, that was incredible. I'd had no idea about that.
Yep.
A long list of people are on that, but Michael's in there obviously because he's amazing. Australian duo Power Glove did Far Cry 3, the Blood Dragon one. Mm.
There's also games like, for example, Brutal Legend, which was done by Double Fine, and the game itself is basically inspired by heavy metal sort of cover artworks. So they basically built a world with all, like, you know, hot rods with 900 exhaust pipes and flames and demon monstery things, and they've kind of made a game out of that, basically, on that sort of, I guess, in the spirit of it, you know. And they had a lot of really good people in there, like Ozzy Osbourne and a bunch of other, you know, people were in there as actual characters in the game.
Well, it's like that Iron Maiden one, the Speed of Life one from last year. It was basically just like Donkey Kong-esque, but all very Iron Maiden-y, like constant Iron Maiden 8-bit sound in the background, and all, you know, skeletons and stuff, hosting the main menu. It's very cool.
Very cool. Yeah. Unfortunately, guys, that's pretty much all we've got time for today. So we've kind of reached the end of our episode. Next week, we'll be joined by Mitch. He'll be back and giving us a rundown on everything that happened at RTX Australia over in Sydney. He's working very hard at the moment.
Yeah, so busy.
Working very hard, so he'll be back joining us. James, thanks for jumping on the mics and doing the old video feed as well, multitasking.
Yeah. I was trying not to look at the keyboard to give an illusion that I could do it without looking.
Yeah, nailed it.
And you've just ruined it now, basically, by calling attention to it. Thanks again, guys, for joining us on Pixel Sift. We hope you enjoy the show. As usual, we'll be putting all the links up on our website, and that website is www.pixelsift.com.au. Scott, where can people find us on social media?
As per usual, Gianni, people can find us at facebook.com/pixelsift, twitter.com/pixelsift, and twitch.tv/pixelsift.
And James, if people want to listen to our other episodes, where are they going?
Of course, you can go to our website, like you said before, pixelsift.com.au, to stream episodes. You subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Pocket Cast, or using the RSS link on your page. And of course, if you could leave a 5-star review, preferably, or a star review of any kind.
Yeah, tell us what you think. We're interested in your feedback, and if you could give us a thing, it always helps with people finding our show and telling us, if you know people who like podcasts about video games, tell them about it as well. The more we can know.
One more thing, Gianni. We've got the Steam group.
We do have a Steam group. Yes. So if you're interested in joining our Steam group, it's Pixel Sift on Steam. Search for that. It's got the same logo as everything else. You can definitely find it on there. Check us on YouTube. We're on everywhere.
Yeah. Basically. We're all down.
All on
get
there.
It together.
We'll see you guys next week. Thanks for joining us.
See ya.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.